Welcome to the Latinx, Latine, and Social Work Podcast, the podcast where we feature people who have an amazing impact on the Latinx, Latine, and the Latino community. My name is Erica Sandoval. I'm a licensed clinical social worker and the CEO and founder of Sandoval Collab and Latinx and Social Work, Inc. Each week, I'm joined by leaders in politics, community organizations, businesses, social justice warriors, and of course, our social workers. We use a mental health, wellness, and social justice lens to talk about issues that impact communities of color while amplifying the voices of individuals and organizations that are doing the work to advance community healing. We're making a space to celebrate our work and talk about what still needs to be done to strengthen our Latino, Latinx, Latine communities and provide them with resources and tools and tips to support them as they navigate the world. Enjoy the episode.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for coming and joining us on behalf of Hispanic Federation. I would like to welcome you all to this wonderful webinar where you will hear from these fabulous women that will give you wonderful information about suicide prevention awareness. My name is Maria Lugo with the Hispanic Federation, Senior Director for Health Initiatives. And I would like tonight we will have Erica Sandoval will be our moderator. And just to give you a little background about Erica, Erica is a licensed clinical social worker, and she's an award-winning mental health practitioner, and she is also the published author of Latinx and Social Work, and also is the founder and CEO of Sandoval Psychotherapy Consultation, known as Sandoval Collab. And so we welcome you on behalf of Hispanic Federation. Erica?
Thank you so much, Maria, and thank you to Hispanic Federation. We are so excited to share space with you. Hispanic Federation has been at the forefront of really supporting the mental health of the community that we love so much. And it is such an honor to be here today. So before I start, I just want to give you some information about some statistics that are really alarming. Suicide is a serious public health problem that can have lasting harmful effects on individuals, families, and communities. And there are many factors that contribute to suicide. And the goal of suicide prevention is to reduce those factors that increase risk and increase factors that promote resilience. So did you know that 48,000 suicide is a leading cause of death in the United States? And it was responsible for over 48,000 deaths in 2021. And in 2021, an estimated 12.3 million adults seriously thought about suicide, and 3.5 million made a plan, and 1.7 million attempted suicide. Those statistics are extremely alarming. And so today, I really want to welcome these three brilliant bilingual bicultural clinicians of Sandoval Collab. And I'm going to share a very quick bio about their incredible abilities. Tiffany Jarevas is a trauma-informed psychotherapist who works with preteens, adolescents, and young adults. And her inclusive collaborative process supports working through anxiety, depression, identity, trauma, inner child healing, complex family systems, life transitions, and financial trauma. She utilizes play therapy, expressive art, spirituality, somatics, and movement techniques when requested to facilitate deeper healing work. Her specialties are in working with families of mixed immigration status through ongoing supportive therapy, conducting psychological evaluations for immigration petitions. Thank you so much for being here, Tiffany. We also have Jessica Ramirez. Jessica is a bilingual licensed master social worker, a native New Yorker, and first generation Latinx female. She has years of experience working with the BIPOC community in Western Queens. She specializes in trauma-informed care, providing services to adolescents, adult survivors of sexual trauma, and intimate partner violence through a holistic integrative approach. Thank you so much for being here. We also have Monica Estrada Guzman, who is a founding program director of Nido Esperanza in Washington Heights, Inwood, and faith-based early childhood intervention program for families with infants, toddlers, age 0 to 3. Her work and excellence has been recognized with NYU, New York University, Silver School of Social Work, Outstanding Student Program Award, and National Association of Social Workers, New York City Chapter, among others. She's also one of our very first bicultural bilingual clinicians at Sandoval Collab and is an author of Latinx, Latina, and Social Work Volume 2. Thank you so much for being here, everyone. It's really an honor to share space with the three of you as clinicians for Sandoval Collab and incredible bilingual, bicultural social workers. So we're going to start, and we're going to just put this in the chat. Where are you coming in from? De donde vienes? If you can type in the chat, where are you coming in from? And while we do that, also just tell us, why did you join today? And I'm going to start with Monica. So Monica, why is mental health important? And what are some of the barriers? Why is it important? ¿Por qué es mental health important? What are some of the barriers?
Well, mental health is important because it allows us to really be able to express what we're feeling, right? It could be at the moment in time. It could be a stressor. It could be a change in circumstance. It can be like transitioning from being a college student to being a professional. It could be being an adolescent, right? And adolescence is very hard and difficult, or being a first-time parent or a parent, navigating that, right? Is we have different, there are different things in our lives that can happen. And mental health is important for us to be able to have and be able to hold space with someone and to be able to talk through things. We can lean on our community sometimes, but sometimes our community can be a little judgmental, right? Or be able, we would like for them to listen to us, but sometimes they'll come with advice, and instead of helping us feel better, we sometimes may feel a little bit, I don't know, uncomfortable, right? So mental health is a space where you can come and talk to an array of practitioners to be able to talk about what's going on. Your second question was, what are some barriers? Sometimes it's the way that we grew up, right? The stigmas, right? I remember talking to my mom as a teen and saying, like, I remember watching Blossom and she was talking about mental health and going to a therapist. And I went to my mom, I was like, yo quiero ir a hablar con una terapeuta. And she's like, pero por qué, right? And she was like, what's wrong? And she worried that it was something that, you know, she had done something wrong. And I would never forget that, right? So it's like, you know, or hearing growing up of being like, it was a stigma of someone being crazy, right? Yesterday I was asking my Uber driver what he thought about mental health and some stigmas. And he was like, pero eso para la gente loca. O la gente que va a un manicomio, people that may be crazy or going, you know, need to be institutionalized. So I think there's a lot of like misconceptions about mental health or a stigma or sometimes like being afraid to just talk to someone, right? Could be one of the barriers. Others could be, you know, sometimes we don't know where to begin. How do we look for a therapist? Do I have insurance? Does my insurance cover it, right? Or what happens if I don't, if I'm under insurance, can I even afford it? Could be some of the barriers, or even, you know, what if I speak Spanish or speak a different language, right? Could I find someone that could understand me, who I could express my thoughts and feelings in my native language? So those are some of the few barriers that come to mind. I don't know if anyone in the chat would like to share what other barriers, or even my colleagues, right? In this chat, what other barriers do you feel like we sometimes face?
Yes, Tiffany, I'd love for you to chime in and share. What do you think about some of the barriers, and why is mental health important?
Mental health is always an important conversation, right? We talk about health being a holistic perspective. It's not just mental. It's also physical. It's emotional. It's about who's in our corner, our community support, familial support, and also institutional support that looks like schools, maybe our workplace environment or our business environment. And also a financial component too. Everything ties into how we interrelate with the world and how our emotions are impacting our behaviors. Some of the things in terms of barriers, I mean, me specifically working with adolescents, youth, a lot of it is, I mean, can I trust this person? Can I identify with this person? Does this person speak the same language? Access, right? And it may not just be necessarily just English to English or Spanish to Spanish, or like same language. It just might be like, do you speak a language that I can understand in terms of if I tell you something's going on, that you can actually meet me in the middle. Other barriers look like, I think in terms of telehealth, access to or accessibility to services, instead of just going to an office that you might not feel comfortable going to in general, having the accessibility to just go on telehealth, that is an option, right? Having accessibility to therapists that are virtual, that are maybe even, we talk about hotlines or resources a little bit later, but there are numbers that you can just text and call whenever you feel like you need support. And I think part of the barriers is knowing that the information is out there and where to go, what number to call, or what link to book. So we'll get into that a little bit later.
Thanks so much, Tiffany. I really appreciate that, all of those thoughts that you had. Jessica, I'd love to hear what you think.
Hi, good evening, everyone. So mental health is important because our mental health is all encompassing of who we are as humans, right? It includes our emotional well-being, our psychological well-being, and our social well-being. It can impact how we perceive ourselves in the world, and how we perceive the world around us. Barriers to receiving some mental health services, kind of what the CoLab team already mentioned, it can be stigma relating to community and just kind of generational ideas of what mental health looks like. It can be unawareness of accessibility to resources. It can be language barriers, insurance barriers, so many things. And I think it's really great that we've come here together as a group to be able to discuss all things mental health and kind of dismantling some negative ideas and stigmas related to mental health and heavy emotions, and then to discuss resources to bring community together, accessibility, and get everyone comfortable in talking about feelings and big feelings and where we can hold space for feelings in a very safe way.
100% agree. And I would love just anyone that wasn't chime in the chat, what does mental health look like for you? Like, just put in the chat, what does mental health look like for you? Because mental health can look very different for people. Jessica, do you want to kind of share a little bit of what mental health looks like for you?
Me? Well, for me, our mental health, including mine, it's individual, and it includes all emotions. And I'm sure, I don't know how many people agree or disagree, but our emotions are like the waves of the ocean. We have highs and we have lows. And I think for me, when I think of mental health, it's more just embracing every emotion that we have. Not just the positive ones, the ones that are really hard to hold, where we have been told maybe culturally, if we feel angry, if we feel sad, if we feel unhappy, that no estamos locas, we're just embracing emotion and it's okay to have emotions. You know, if we pay attention to our mental health and our emotions, especially the really hard ones to hold, like anger and sadness, and we sit with it and are allowed a space to process it, oftentimes we'll figure out that it's our boundaries being imposed. And if we can sit shapeshift and realign, we can determine what we need to move away from that emotion and come from a space that feels more empowering. Like the waves of the ocean, right? We have our highs and we have our lows.
It's so true. We do have our highs, we have our lows. Like, mental health is very unique for each person, but it's just basically, think of physical health, and we have all our physical needs. And when some part of us is not well, we go to the doctor and we look for support. Mental health is the same way. When something doesn't seem right, when something doesn't feel right, when we're losing sleep or we're ruminating, and we'll get into this much more in this discussion, but there's a support that we can access, but sometimes we don't access it because of all of the barriers that we just talked about. So I really appreciate all of you sharing some of these barriers. What do you think are some of the warning signs that you might need support for your mental health? And I'll start with Tiffany.
Yeah, like Jessica was saying, it looks different for everybody, right? I mean, I think part of the conversation is that to recognize our humanity, we are not robots, right? Life gets thrown at us in a million different directions. Life will always be lifing, as I like to say. And our role as humans, breaking against that system, is to check in with ourselves. What is our body telling us? What is our body announcing to us, and being in tune with that? I think, as we were mentioning, in terms of the stigmas of, like, it's one thing to have, like, to trip and fall and scrape your knee and actually see that injury, but it's something different to actually feel that injury inside and maybe not have it recognized so honestly. And so some of the warning signs might look like anxiety and depression, and anxiety looking like shortness of breath, heart palpitations, racing thoughts, constantly going, not able to really sit still, in terms of something is always happening. There's always something pressing, or I'm not doing enough, or feeling like you're not doing enough. And other sides of it might be eating more than you used to, eating less than you used to, sleeping more than you used to, sleeping less than you used to, or having interrupted sleep, maybe, I said yes, nightmares, having some nightmares, shaky hands, shaky feet. And also some of the things, I want to create a differentiation in terms of adolescents and youth, and also children. The symptoms for youth are manifest very physically, right? It might be a stomach ache. Right. Mm-hmm. They might be complaining of stomach issues. They might not have a desire to eat, or they might have many headaches, many tension headaches. A lot of it calls for stress, maybe very avoidant into going to school. Some of the reasons why depression or anxiety spark up in youth is because of school related things. Not only is it stress related to homework, but it may be also bullying in schools. Right. It also might be bullying on the social media, internet. That's something to really be mindful of like how much we consume as youth, adolescents, and adults as well, all is the same, but very much more for young folks when it comes to social media and how much information there is and access to that information, good and bad. And so just being mindful of that consumption. Isolation may also happen. They might not want to go out anymore or go hang out with their friends, have no longer interest in the things that they used to. And for the adults, it also looks like maybe drinking a little bit more. Maybe that one glass of wine might turn into a couple of glasses of wine every other night, right? A lot of it might happen due to burnout in work specifically. Managing work schedules can also be stress-inducing, deadlines, anxiety-inducing, right? And so sometimes people cope through different substances, and maybe increased use of those substances, and or isolating from things that they used to have interest in, or family or friends, that kind of thing might also affect. Additionally, libido, sex drive might be increased or decreased in these periods of times too. Just very much feeling distracted or forgetful as well are some of the warning signs of, how do I know when something is not okay? And the reality is, it's okay to not be okay. Mm-hmm. These are some of the things to just notice, to take note of. Everything is data, right?
It's true. It is okay to not be okay. And I think that's what we're getting at today, that mental health is just as important as physical health. And it's okay to not be okay. And it's okay to seek support when you're not feeling well, right? Just like if you had if you were going through something, with your heart, you wouldn't stay home and ignore it. You would go to a cardiologist and seek support, just as if you are not feeling well mentally and emotionally. But I think that what we're getting at is that our culture, our Latino culture, sometimes it doesn't allow us to really seek support because of all that stigma, and we're not normalizing that it's okay to not be okay. Because a lot of the times, as Monica shared, and as Jessica shared, and Tiffany, you as well, is that we're always keeping these secrets. We're keeping these secrets at home. We're trying to keep all of like that information really close to our hearts. We don't want to expose our family secrets. We don't want to expose ourselves. And a lot of times the trauma that we inherit within the family system, we just continue to pass it down because our parents may not, or our caretakers may not have seek support or had access to services. So with that, I wanted to kind of check in with Monica and hear a little bit about what your thoughts about what are some of the warning signs. I know you work with mothers and children, so I'd love to hear from you on what are some of your thoughts about this, Monica.
Sure. Sometimes we don't think about the changes that happen in our lives, right? In our womanhood, there's different identities that we carry, right? Sometimes when, you know, there's the excitement of being pregnant, going through pregnancy and then having your baby, and then what happens, right? Oftentimes our bodies are, oftentimes we experience something that could be called baby blues, right? It could be a 2-week period where we're crying. We have all these like intense emotions, but what happens if it lingers more than after 2 weeks, right? Sometimes for women, some of the warning signs when we're postnatally, it could be that you no longer feel that excitement, right? There's something wrong. You have constant worrying for your baby, yourself, their safety, right? And this can lean into sometimes having postpartum depression or anxiety, right? Or sometimes psychosis. So some that work in my work that I do with mothers and children, especially prenatal and postnatal moms, those are some of the things that we kind of look at that we don't think about, how, you know, our bodies are this beautiful vessel, right? That carries this baby, but also as soon as we give birth, our body goes back, it goes back into what it was before. And with it comes all these hormonal changes, right? All these things that happen in our bodies that sometimes makes us feel very intense emotions, could impact the way that we look at our day-to-day, even our interactions or connections with our babies. Sometimes mothers experience this 6 months to a year or 2 years after postpartum. Sometimes it happens as well if you're breastfeeding and you stop breastfeeding, that once again can trigger that, right? Or getting your period again after a long, after like 9 months of not having. So those are some of the, I would say some of the signifiers. If you are prenatal, postnatally, talk to your provider, right? Let them know what's going on. Usually your providers will do assessments to make sure that you're doing okay and your baby. It could be situational, right? It could be, my change of identity that I have this baby. I used to, you know, have a life outside of my child, right? What do I do now? Who am I now? Could be, you know, some things that we sometimes, as we all and seen in the chat, that it could be those circumstances and changes that we have in the postnatal and even sometimes prenatal stage of our lives. And then, you know, with children, as well, things that could happen in the home, right? Things that are happening in your environment. If your child is, you know, experiencing like bullying, or there's like they're not feeling, you know, safe at school. There's a whole other factors that could be as well, and keeping track and seeing how your child's behavior is. I think Tiffany did an amazing job at differentiating, right, with the kids. Children, adolescents, and then adults, how depression and anxiety manifests, right? And I think that's as parents, we have an eye on our children, and we can see if there's those slight changes as well.
Thanks so much, Monica. It's so true is that as Latinas, as women, and women that have experienced childbirth, there's so much that's happening in our body, and our bodies don't go back to its normal state. It takes a very long time. It takes close to over a year for things to even start falling into place. I mean, I remember, you know, it's not an even old wives' tale anymore. It's like the la cuarentena. It's like you have 40 days, you're not supposed to do anything. And it's true, you're not supposed to move, because I remember that they said your body has to, like the organs, everything has to go back to where it belongs. And for 40 days, you're just supposed to rest. And we don't have that. We don't have that opportunity, because there's a lot of us that just go back to work. We don't have like FMLA. We may not have insurance. We may not have that opportunity. That may not have that option. So there's so much that can impact our mental health. Our physical health is connected. So holistically, a lot of times we're unable to really care for ourselves. I wanted to kind of check in with Jessica and to hear what are some of the practical skills you can use today to really kind of care for yourself? Like, what do you think are some things that we can do to take care of ourselves?
Well, yeah, yes and yes and yes to everything that has just been said prior throughout this entire conversation. And I do believe that maybe as people from BIPOC communities or immigrant families, we don't give enough honor to our bodies and to the idea of rest. So how can we care for ourselves? There are so many ways we can care for ourselves. First and foremost, we all are our experts. So if you take a little time just to think about you and sit in your body will always tell you what it needs. You are your expert. But when we're going through difficult times, our dance isn't really flowing. Simple practical tools to get us through, breathe. Don't forget your breath. Your breath is your most powerful tool in regulating your nervous system. If you just are having a hard day or a hard day with your child, because yes, you can love your child, but not like them in that moment. And it's okay. Still love them. We're not questioning it. Put both feet on the ground. If you have the space, put one hand to heart, one hand on your lower belly where we keep all our emotions, and take one deep breath in through the nose. Maybe hold for 4 seconds and then an audible release through the mouth. And if you can repeat that 4 times, you will tell your nervous system, hey, I'm okay. I'm going to get through this moment. Another very practical skill would be movement. If you can move your body and dance, in working out, in any way we move our bodies, because we release those feel-good endorphins that are also help us regulate our nervous system and get to a space where we ground just in the moment. And lastly is our rest. Rest in naps, rest in, you know, good sleep hygiene, rest in watching something funny on television. Because when we rest our minds and bodies, we restore. These are such basic practical tools, and they don't cost us anything. They can be done in seconds, and they bring us right back to the moment, to the present moment where we can ground and just understand that we're all right. We're going to get through it. And then I'll add as a bonus, if you can do any of the above in nature, it's another beautiful hit to the nervous system that says we're okay, because our minds and bodies, the way we're connected to Mother Earth, we automatically relax. And guys, this doesn't cost us anything. It's free 99, just free basic tools.
I love that, free 99. I love it. It's so true. It doesn't. And it's sometimes we take it so for granted. Like we take like everything that surrounds us, that's free, that's accessible, that's ours. Like this is our breath. This is our space. It's our time to kind of pause. We are ownership of our own time. We just allow the world to take ownership of our time and our peace. And a lot of times just grounding yourself and really connecting with your heart center, aligning, and just making sure that you are filling your own cup before you support others is so, so true. So taking deep breaths, being in nature, being mindfully aware of what's coming up in your body. It's so true. I love that. Thank you so much, Jessica. Tiffany, what do you think?
Some things that we can do to take care of ourselves, and I'll speak to like workplace environment burnout, because that also leads to significant amount of distress. It would be being able to identify what it is that is stressing, that what is the stressor, right? And identifying a plan to be able to reduce, alleviate, or maybe that just looks like venting and having a support about that stressor. It might look like speaking to a supportive supervisor or just speaking to the supervisor about workload. Advocating for healthier workplaces is suicide prevention, right? Also, if you're a business owner, if you have a side hustle and or just family person having a million one things going, all the tabs running, I say 50 tabs open at the same time, right? One of the things that you can do to help yourself in that moment is to take out a piece of paper and a pen and do a brain dump. Write everything down that's in your head. It may might not make sense. It doesn't need to be a sentence. It can be bullet points, but let it out.
See it on the page. I love that.
Yeah.
So just like dump everything that you're thinking about on a page so you can just like remove it from your energy source and just put it out there and release it. I love that.
So I say it in two ways. Yes, it could be one, a brain dump, or and or it can be a word map. And I happen to like word maps. Think of spider's web, Charlotte's web, right? You start with a thought and what is connected to that. Maybe thinking work, maybe thinking deadline. Write that, circle it. Another thought, write it, circle it. And follow that train of thought. Follow that web. So that's something I like to encourage folks to do, especially folks who just feel overwhelmed with a lot of different things that are happening or enmeshing in their lives. A lot of things can get very entwined. And sometimes the question can be like, where do I fit in? Where do I prioritize myself? And also, how do I fill my cup? Finding where you stand in the middle of it all makes it feel more manageable. Also, by brain dumping in a physical sense, by grabbing a paper and pen, there's something that activates a certain part of your brain of creativity, of release, and rest at that same time. When you're typing something on your phone, you're still using that logical, rational, structured aspects of yourself. And so when you are using creative methods to kind of release yourself, you're also giving yourself permission to just feel in that moment. And one of those things to do. Just because my specialty is in finance, being able to have conversations, especially when finance stressors are also a leading cause toward anxiety and depression as well, being able to have conversations with a financial consultant, support, social worker, or just having conversations about money is something that also needs to be normalized, because much of what happens is that we go on complaining, retail therapying, and then we have to deal with the consequences later, right? And so being able to address that, put a plan in place to have some peace of mind in your future planning will also be able to alleviate and budget for spending, right? If you want to allocate for a spa trip, a manicure, just be able to anticipate that. And some of the other things are very tangible. I always suggest, yes, we have all the tools within us already, right? Everything that we need is at our disposal. And it's sometimes just remembering and reminding ourselves how to utilize that self. What I love to encourage folks is to take your hand and take your other finger, or take your other hand and take one finger and trace your hand. The objective of this is to go as slow as possible. And why? Because every time you come up, you're going to inhale. Every time you come down, you take an exhale. Mm. Audible. Inhale. Yeah. Right? Do it about 5 times, going and coming back. You remember, number one, that you have a hand. Number two, that you're here. Because when you're in the midst of it, like thinking very cerebrally, very much in your head, and there's a million and one tabs open, breath is the most important tool that you have. Mm-hmm. So that, again, coming to your 5 senses, especially when you feel those heart palpitations, that constrictedness on your chest, maybe some headaches, your shoulders are up to your ears at that point, grounding yourself. What are the 5 senses? Anybody in the chat want to help me? I'd appreciate it. Some of the 5 senses are, I might forget one, but hearing, taste, mm-hmm. sight, touch. See, I told you I'm going to forget one.
Hearing, taste, sight, touch. Now you're making me forget.
Sound.
Right?
Sound.
No, that's always the one I forget. It's like, what am I smelling in this moment? It's a good question to ask.
Smelling, smell. That's what she said. Smell. That's right.
Smell.
Smell. And it's true. We can incorporate all of this with aromatherapy. With sometimes home cooked meals really helps you. Sometimes just un cafecito, like the smell of coffee, the smell of tea, té de manzanilla. And I want to kind of shout out some of the things in the chat. One of our participants said, Tara, she says, in the Spanish culture, we're taught to be superwoman and we're going and going like the Energizer Bunny. And self-care was not the norm growing up. And unheard of because it was seen as a sign of weakness. It's important to inform our clients and families we work with about the importance of self-care. 100%, 100%. So interesting. Like today, just today, I called my mom. I haven't talked to her for a bit. And We have been going through some stuff with my dad. She's been his caretaker lately. And my dad is going through some really tough times. He's grieving the loss of his dog, who was just put down. And he's been very depressed and he hasn't been able to get out and doesn't want to do anything. My mom's like, you know, está vago. Yo no sé lo que le pasa. I don't know what's going on with him. He doesn't want to do anything. I said, no, mom, he's depressed. Yeah. And she's like, I don't know what to do. He can't get him to do anything. I'm like, mom, he's grieving. And like, we don't understand what that means, depression, grieving, you know, and just talking to her for 20 minutes. She's like, oh, I understand. I go, mom, but how are you? You know, talking bus up care. How are you? She's like, ay, mija, I haven't done anything. My hair looks a mess. My uñas are a mess. I look a wreck. I feel very anxious. I'm like, so maybe it's time to fill your cup. No shame in that game. Like, go and take care of you. He'll be okay. And that's so true. That self-care is always taught as Marianismo in the Spanish culture, is that we first have to always give up everything that we need in order to care for everyone around us. Like, we have to sacrifice ourselves. And so when you're working with your clients, when you're working with this community, you just let them know that it is okay to need to step away, set some boundaries, take care of themselves. Like, say, I'm not okay. I'm going to take some time for myself. That's allowed. And so establishing those healthy boundaries and then incorporating all these amazing techniques that Tiffany just shared, that Jessica just shared, and just like giving those tools, giving the permission, giving ourselves that permission to utilize these tools and utilize ourselves, because 100% we are the medicine. No one can give us a pill to take care of everything. We ourselves are the ones that are healing. And even as social workers, we're not the healers completely. We're just supporting as healers, because it's a collaboration when you're working with your clients. And I'd love to hear from Monica. Monica, what do you think? What are some other things that we can incorporate? What are some practical skills?
Right. One thing that I like to integrate into my work in private practice, and also I might work at NYP, is showing up with radical hospitality, right? How do I show up for my patients, for my clients, right? One of them is by active listening. Sometimes we just want to be heard. That person just wants to be listened to, right? There's a difference between listening and hearing, right? One is like to respond, but one is just to be able just to hold space. The other one is asking, what do you need? How do I show up for you, right? Listening, what can I do for you? If you see that a friend or a colleague or a family member, Erica, thank you for that beautiful example of both of your parents, right? You call to check in and it ended up being something else. You listened to your mom, you validated what she was feeling, and you provide a little psychoeducation, right? And then reminded her to take care of herself.
With love, because you know how moms are. They're like going to be like, no me digas lo que yo tengo que hacer. So you got to do it with love.
So that's where like radical hospitality, radical like graciousness, right? That we come in and at that moment in time. The other one sometimes could be, right, like I statements versus you statements. You know, I feel or I am worried for you, right? Coming from that judgmental, loving, caring way. The other one is, you know, as parents, like, how do we prevent or how do we make sure that our kids are doing well, not only academically, but teachers get to see them for almost 8 hours plus a day. So it's like staying engaged with your children, showing up for school events, or even checking, how was your day? Did you have a hard time with your homework? What's going on? What's something new? This is the new start of the school year, right? How's it going? How are your new teachers or any transitions that your kids have had? Sometimes parents, right, do not understand the school system or materials or certain things. Creating that space to be able to support the parents and the families that you work, helping them by providing sexual education on the education system. How to advocate what rights, what services your children have in the schools, right? Most schools now have counselors. They provide counseling. Some schools, you know, the state has invested a lot on funding social workers within the school. So there's those resources as well, right? That you can go talk to someone, direct your child to be able to talk to someone there. The other one is like, how how do we start talking about mental health when I haven't even addressed or know how I even describe or talk about mental health or my social emotional, right? Oftentimes, like if we all can think about how do I talk to my child when maybe my parents didn't know how to talk to me or didn't ask me about emotions, right? I bet that if I was to ask all of you, if you ask your parents, hola, mami, ¿cómo estás? Mami, how are you? They'd be like, estoy bien. And your and the bien is not like, no estoy bien, es un estoy bien. And the body language and the tone sets it completely different, right? I think our emotions are bien, estoy contenta, trabajando, la vida pasa, right? Our vocabulary does not expand to, I'm feeling irritated, right? I'm feeling like lonely, I'm feeling sad, I'm feeling elated, right? All these different things. So sometimes it's like, yeah, I love it. Aquí en la lucha, right? What does that mean? It goes back to Marianismo too. We gotta push ourselves to do the best that we can, right? To continue. So one thing is like allowing ourselves to really do a check-in and be able to talk about how we feel, right? What do we need in that moment in time to model? I think many of us are in this space. And that's the work that we do. A lot of psychoeducation and being able to meet the parent where they're at, for them to be able to show up with their kids, right? We haven't talked a little bit about what our trauma experience has been as children or lack of. And sometimes that does come up in our parenting skills or in our parenting relationship with our kids. And I think that's very important to also be able to address.
And you know, Monica, you know, you said so many things that I want to kind of chime in about, like the modeling about the needing of just normalizing not feeling well. I think that happens often, even as teenagers, as kids, we often don't want to worry our parents because they already have so many things going on that another worries we're going to be shameful of causing them more worry. And especially if we're coming from, first gen or immigrant families that are having multiple stressors, in the family system, there's just another additional stressor. So you talked about the trauma that lives within ourselves and then within our environment. And it's really difficult for us to model needing support or saying that we're not feeling well, we're depressed, because they might be like, what do you have to be depressed about? You know, or what I'm doing everything I can to give you everything you need. Like that's some of the conversations that you can potentially hear from a parent. Like, pero yo te estoy dando todo lo que puedo. Like, I'm giving you everything I can. What else do you want from me? You know, you can imagine like a mother getting upset and feeling really defensive over saying I'm not happy or I'm depressed. And it's not, we can't take it personal. We have to just inquire what is it about your life that's making you feel unhappy, because it may not have to do with anything within the family system. It could be like, you know, you all mentioned like bullying. It could be like they're comparing yourselves via social media to other people, body shaming, you know, just really kind of trying to figure out your sexuality and not knowing like how to talk about it with anyone else. There's so many reasons. And so I really like that you all have been mentioned, like modeling conversations. And so I think like some of the tips that we can give people is if you're working with parents and they're going through some things and or the teens, like just making sure that conversations are normalized, like maybe exploring and inquiring with love and asking the right question, or just listening, like Monica said, active listening. I'm worried about you, not you are lazy, right? Just like Monica said, like, yo estoy preocupada, te quiero mucho. ¿Qué puedo yo hacer? What can I do for you? And even with a partner. And a lot of the times, the way to prevent suicidal ideation is by just showing that you're there and you care. It's really difficult because a lot of times we just go by our day and we just do and go. And especially if we're dealing with multiple stressors and we need to make ends meet, we might not be able to see between those lines of what's truly happening at home. And then you're surprised when there is like some crisis and you thought that everything was okay. And we want to prevent that. So the topic today was like suicide prevention, like becoming more aware, becoming more understanding, and having the right tools to really kind of explore. So I want to kind of just do a quick fireside chat. And, you know, let's mention some different roles of mental health professionals and just describe it a little bit. And I think we have a lot of social workers here, by the way. If you're a social worker, just chime in the chat if you're a social worker. Just put, I'm a social worker, or heart, or how about this? If you're a social worker, just heart on the screen. And for those that are not, we'll just share with you a little bit. Look at that. Look at all these beautiful social workers coming in. Amazing. And if you are not, we're going to share with you a little of the difference between the mental health providers. So there's social workers. Who wants to talk about what social workers do? And we do everything. Social workers are essential, but just some, but some things about social workers. And then there are psychologists and psychiatrists. So start with whoever wants to begin. Jessica, Tiffany, Monica.
Social workers, we do it all. I think that's the beauty of the profession. So at least me as a clinician, I work with survivors of gender-based violence in a very individual setting, providing clinical support in the form of therapy. But social workers as a whole can be educators, can be community leaders, policy writers. Guys, help me out here.
We could do it all. And there's difference. And if you're seeking support, mental health support, we have MSWs, LMSWs, LCSWs, LCSWR, all these different credentialed social workers that they make us take all these tests and go through all these hours. But what it means is that we're licensed to practice and we're licensed to work under a clinical social worker who is licensed to diagnose. And the difference between that with the between a psychiatrist is a psychiatrist is has a doctorate that they're licensed to prescribe medicine, prescribe medication. And the difference between a psychiatrist and psychologist, if Tiffany, maybe you want to chime in.
The difference between a psychiatrist and a psychologist is that piece of medication management and being able to prescribe. Psychologists also really focus in on evaluations, early childhood, any evaluation need and developmental. I think also really the difference between those two and social work is really the systems perspective that social workers bring in their approach in a holistic overall approach, whereas psychologists and psychiatrists are really much more person-centered and like the inner workings of the brain, right?
How to reframe,
rewire. Social workers, you can find at any stage, at any place, at any location of community, and they may not necessarily hold the title social worker, which makes the profession very much more dynamic.
I love that. And, you know, I think yesterday, Monica and I, we had a beautiful evening. We were on Opcion, which is a Spanish channel. It was online. And Monica, you said something was really important relating to suicide and awareness and just making sure, because they asked us, you know, what does it mean to like have someone be suicidal? And you said, you know, people don't want to hurt themselves. They're just suffering and they don't want to suffer. Can you share a little bit more about that? Because I think that's the stigma that's out there, right?
Yeah, a lot of it could be feeling like very isolated, very, you know, alone. When we talk about depression or anxiety, it's, you know, those are diagnoses that could be very, very isolated. Right. You feel those emotions. You feel that intensely. Right.
That intense emotion.
Of I'm alone, that disparity. Right. That things are not going to get any better, you know, or that you're in this like deep hole and you're trying to get out. So it's like that despair of like not wanting to, you know, of trying to find a way out of that. Right. And it's, you know, going and being able to reach out and speak to people, right? To be able to say, this is going on. This is like the intensity. And this is where community, this is where, you know, parents, this is like friends. And,
you know, colleagues, right? We all check in on one another. When we haven't heard from one another, it's like, are you okay? Right? I think our team chat is very active in that sense, that it's like, hey ladies, how are you? We chime in, right? We need that connection with community. And also the other thing is, you know, we can have scary intrusive thoughts, right? We can think about wanting to hurt ourselves, or we can have passive ideation where it's like, I wish I could get away. I wish I can disappear. Right.
One of the first
questions is, do you plan to end your life? Or if you go to sleep and not wake up, right. Those are two different questions that sometimes with our own intensity or the things that we get, like, we know, I can feel it. It's like that, like a boiling pot, right. Of like, I just don't know what to do, or just kind of want to go, or just, you know, get away, or not be, right? And so it's like being able to differentiate and learn about those two things, right? And this is where mental health providers come in, and our friends and our families, like, ¿estás bien? ¿Qué está pasando? He visto un cambio en ti. I've seen a change or shift, right? So yeah, you know, it's important, like, and you know, September is Suicide Prevention Month, and it's us really holding ourselves accountable and building community and checking in on those, right? Checking in on friends that just had babies. How do I show up, right? They don't sleep. They're constantly taking care of their babies, right? How do I show up for my parents, my dad? You know, my mom's taking care of my dad. My dad is grieving. My mom, like, our caregivers, right? Us calling our mothers, how are you? How are you doing, right? Our friends, our kids. Just those check-ins, I think, are so important, because, you know, all it takes is someone to smile and just to validate you and act a shift, right?
That's right. That's right. I love it. And, you know, I'm going to just chime in the chat. They said, social work is meet clients where they are throughout and stand beside them to empower them. Yeah. The difference in social workers is that social work is coming from a holistic approach, which has been the experience of many. And it's so true. And I love everything that you said, Monica. And also, I just wanted to kind of add that as people that are supporting our community, when someone shares that they're having a suicidal thought, suicidal ideation, the first feeling you have is that you have to get them help, right? But what is that type of help that you're getting? So we have to be careful not to continue to harm our community and systems. It doesn't mean they're automatically going into the ER or going to be hospitalized, because that's not the help that they may need. It really depends on the intensity of what they're describing. And so you have to explore more, like Monica said, like, do you have a plan? And it's so true. And we're so afraid to ask those questions because we don't talk about this enough, right? And we're so afraid to ask those questions of even our friends or family, like, wait, what's going on? Have you been thinking about hurting yourself? Like, let's just normalize asking this question. Let's make it normal. Like, I am experiencing you as very sad. Like, are you thinking about this? Like, let's ask that question, because sometimes we're afraid to ask it. And then we're so surprised when something has happened. Yeah.
Sorry, Erica, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but this really does speak to me. In keeping with your thought, asking the question or the curiosity to show up and tell your friend, your loved one, your colleague, hey, I see something. Are you okay? Just in that curiosity and that question, and even showing up here today for this panel discussion, these are seeds planted towards working on reframing mental health stigma amongst BIPOC communities. Just the curiosity to ask the questions.
That's right. And what are some of the resources, if you can just chime in really quickly, what are some resources that are out there? And we're going to have our team just add those resources to the chat as well. You want to share some resources that are out there?
Specifically for if you're thinking or contemplating suicide, or have ever thought of, or you feel like you need somebody to speak with in the moment, the number to text or to call is 988. That is 988, the National Suicide Hotline. There's going to be a couple of other things in the chat. I will say, go ahead.
And the 988 is now in Spanish. And it's so big. They just released a text and chat in Spanish. So share with your community, share with each other, 988 is now in Spanish, and you will automatically be connected to someone that can help you in crisis. So that is huge. Thank you so much, Tiffany. What other resources are out there? Jessica, Monica?
If you're working with prenatal, postnatal mothers, or you know anyone that has had a baby and are experiencing baby blues or a little bit more than baby blues, right? There's a great organization, PSI International. I just dropped it, and they even have it in Spanish as well, is PSI Internacional, which they have mental health providers there to support you. Or even as a provider, if you're not sure, is my patient or client experiencing postpartum depression? You can call in. They have a hotline for providers. They also have groups. We often forget about fathers. 1 in 10 fathers experience perinatal mood disorders. Mm-hmm. And 1 in 7 women experience perinatal mood disorders. So if we look how many of us are here on this conversation, right? One of us will experience perinatal mood disorders. So it's important to have that. As providers, jump in. They have trainings, free webinars. They have that as well, if I'm not sure.
Jessica, any last resources that you want to share?
I would say if someone is contemplating or has ideation due to a recent kind of traumatic event that falls under gender-based violence, RAIN is a really good resource. Even calling 311. Mm-hmm. And that's another resource. You have the CoLab team here, who is another resource to you. These are the things that I think of off the top of my head.
We also have NAMI, and we'll drop it in the chat as well. NAMI is really great. RAIN is amazing. And under the Sandoval CoLab website, we have incorporated many different resources for you. And we have included our collective's clinics, which are, they take many different insurances. They take Medicaid, Medicare. They take Medicaid managed care plans. We also are providing support. We do have openings at Sandoval CoLab, and we're going to drop a link here. If you know of anyone that is seeking support, we can match them with a therapist, a bilingual, bicultural therapist. We're a huge network now, and it's really exciting. The link we just dropped in the chat, that's the sandovalcollab.com resource link. But now we're also going to drop a Google link in the chat that you can actually fill that out. And if you need to be matched with someone, or you want to connect someone to get matched with a therapist, please just fill that out.
Thanks for tuning in to the Latinx and Social Work Podcast. This show is a labor of love, where we hope these conversations will not only provide resources, but will help heal, lead, and inspire our communities and let them know that they're not alone. If you enjoy this episode, be sure to leave a review and comment on iTunes or Spotify, letting us know what you think. And if you're interested, purchase our award-winning books, Latinx, Latina, and Social Work, Stories That Heal, Inspire, and Connect Communities, on our website, www.latinxandsocialwork.com. Lastly, be sure to follow us on social media at Latinx and Social Work. Till next time.